It's Sunday morning, and we are protecting military families on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk, with Chris Brochu, the owner of Brochu Law, and the Second Opinion.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Protecting Military Families with Chris Brochu. We've got Scott filling in today for Casey. We're going to be talking about a number of different things related to the Honoring Our Pact Act. That's the act that has comprehensive protections for military families and veterans that were exposed to toxic burn pits, toxic water at Camp Lejeune. It's going to provide additional medical benefits, assistance to homeless veterans, additional VA benefits, a private right of action for Camp Lejeune families, whether they were civilian workers, spouses, children, or veterans that served there. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, brother. Sorry about the minor screw-ups there. Live radio is always a fun adventure, especially at 6:30 on a Sunday morning.
All good, all good. So before we get started, Scott, could you just tell our listeners, I know I've heard so much great feedback from a lot of our military families recently about different topics they like and questions that they have. So I really want to just open it up. If anybody wants to call in, they can. If not, we'll just hit the ground running. But if you could, just give them the call-in number in case we have anyone that wants to comment.
If you want to jump in the conversation this morning, our call-in number is 855-765-1045. Again, that's 855-765-1045. That's your hotline into me. I'll get a little bit of information from you, and we'll get you into the conversation with Chris. If you've got any kind of particular experiences with the topics we're talking about today, or if you've got some general questions that you'd want to reach out to Chris about, you're certainly welcome to give us a call today. You can also direct those questions or concerns to case@brochulaw.com, and he can follow up with you off air.
And I just want to give a quick shout out our video editor and one of my good friends, Justin at Nova Productions. Shout out to him. He wakes up early. He's here filming with us and editing all these videos and podcasts. So shout out to him. If you are local to Jacksonville or Northeast Florida and you don't have him working your videos, you're making a big mistake. He's reliable and produces absolutely phenomenal content. So thank you, Justin. Today, what we're going to talk about is Honoring Our Pact Act and where we stand. The first iteration of the bill that went through the House was passed. The first time it touched the Senate floor, it was passed with an 84-14 vote. And now, as we sit here today on Thursday, I believe it was, the Senate failed to pass it. I believe they only had 55 votes. So we had a 30-vote swing. And, you know, as everybody knows, and Scott, I know this is our second episode together, my show is not political, and I don't want it to be. You know, I don't really care what letter is next to your name. My question is, do you vote for legislation that supports veterans, or are you against veterans? That's really all I want to talk about. And what's so discouraging to me, and in Florida right now, we've got sort of a split. So former Governor Scott, now Senator Scott, voted to deny the Honoring Our Pact Act this go around. The first time he voted yes. Senator Rubio voted yes this most recent time. So, again, without getting into a political conversation, it's something that we need to do as Floridians that support veterans. You need to call former Governor Scott's office, Senator Scott. You need to call his office and tell him to bring this back to the floor and to vote for our Florida veterans. There are a ton of Northeast Florida families that are affected by this bill, and we need to get it back on the floor, and we need to vote for it, and he needs to support veterans and Florida military families, because this is absurd that this is not passed yet.
The curious thing about it with the reconsideration that happened on Thursday and the swing of all of those votes, they had everything pretty much ready to go. And whatever the political machinations behind that influenced that adjustment, the net effect of it is that it suspended any kind of care initiatives that so many people are looking forward to. And, you know, you've got an opportunity to exercise some influence on that, particularly if you are one of those military families that is impacted by this. You need to make sure that your voice is heard about that.
Yeah, it sort of makes you step back and say, wow, it was odd when I went and saw the roll call votes that 30 Republicans had sort of killed this bill, because, you know, I mean, typically Republicans support veterans, right? I mean, a lot of them run on that. I know a lot of our Republican senators, at least to my knowledge, have served in our military. So I'm surprised that they wouldn't vote for military families. But nonetheless, please reach out to them and get them. All 30 of those votes were Republican. I think based on what I read, it was because there was an amendment that was going to add in some additional spending of like $400 billion. What always astonishes me about our leadership, especially at the federal level, is how they can justify spending, you know, $300 trillion in the CARES Act, or they can justify giving money to just about every country on earth. But when it comes to actually helping people that served this country, like veterans and military families, sacrifice, we can't get anything done. And it's absolutely impacting the spirit of our veterans.
It begs the question, where's the common ground? At what point does American interest become superseded by whatever other political interests? Because if we're not taking care of our own, who are we taking care of?
Exactly. And we need to. And what I want to just recap on today and talk about, there are a number of things floating around in the legal community and in our military community that we need to clear up. I've been getting calls, and I screen a lot of different types of calls for military families at my firm. I mean, everything from SGLI, VGLI, TSGLI, 3M, VA disability appeals, you know, obviously Camp Lejeune claims if those pass. But some of the Camp Lejeune callers have been asking, well, I see advertising that this has passed, or I see that I can file a lawsuit.
Yeah, it's curious about that, the story is pretty far-reaching. You'll see news coverage of it on Fox News. You'll see local coverage pertaining to individuals in our own community or in regional communities who have been impacted, who have had some service time there. But with all of the attention that's coming around to this, again, between the legislation, the news coverage, attorney advertisements and stuff, what do people need to know about this as far as whether or not they can approach someone about a claim and how to go about initiating that? Because it seems sort of confusing with so many players involved in the game. Where does somebody get started on that?
I can assure you that right now, anybody that's marketing, right, that's paying to put these on the airways and to put these in other places, I'd be interested to, and this is what I would ask anybody that has a potential Camp Lejeune claim, ask them if they are representing our veterans and our military families, because I would be stunned if every single one of them was. Most of those are marketing firms or selling leads or doing things like that. Go to a law firm's website that is VA accredited or that knows what it's like to represent veterans and military families on claims other than something like this, and you'll see sort of the progression. So this case is unique. Anybody that served between 53 and 87 at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina would have a potential claim if the bill is passed, right? So the first thing we have to do, everybody needs to call their senators in their state. If you live in Florida, that's Marco Rubio and Rick Scott. You've got to call them. You've got to make sure that they bring this back to a vote and pass the Honoring Our Pact Act. Once that's done, here's what you can do. If you were either veteran, spouse, ex-spouse, child, it could be anyone from a child in utero, children, stepchildren, half-children, full children of the family, I suppose, adopted children, right? Anybody that was drinking water there. And it doesn't have to be consecutive. So it doesn't need to be 30 days consecutive. It's got to be 30 days combined. And if you can prove that, you know, civilian, spouse, child, veteran were there during that time period. And the records are pretty clear, right? I mean, I've got some clients that have called me. One of them was born there. I mean, that's a hospital record. He was born at the hospital at Camp Lejeune. They can they can verify that, even though he was a toddler when he was there. But if you know that your family was there, or your family has a number of one of the illnesses that they have service connected to that area, meaning they effectively say, if you served there during this time period and you have one of these conditions, then we will have sort of the, we'll bridge the causal gap. We know that that time period and drinking toxic water there likely exposed you to contaminants that cause these illnesses and diseases. Similar to, you know, you've got your Gulf War presumptive service connected. Hopefully with honoring our PACT Act, the burn pit will, the VA, I think the latest stat was like 70% of burn pit cases are denied as service connected, which is absurd. And then they also have Agent Orange with Vietnam service connected during that time period. And the VA does some really good things, and they are getting better. So I just want to be clear on that. We're not here to discourage veterans from filing. What we're trying to sort of bridge the gap on is, if you are having difficulty, or you don't want to battle this alone, or you're not getting any answers, or you can't figure out how to file your appeal, call someone. Call us, call another firm, call a VSO, and make sure that your voice is heard, because the last thing you want to do is give up, because you're not helping anyone if you just give up.
And you're certainly welcome to call the show today, 855-765-1045, if you'd like to get in the conversation, or if you've got some questions and you want an immediate answer. And, of course, you can also follow up on air, case@brochulaw.com, and that'll get you in touch with Chris Brochu at the Chris Brochu Law Firm, and he'll be happy to follow up with you off air. Now, here's a question that I've got, that we're seeing advertisements, we're hearing so much in the media. Does this represent a sort of a class action case, or is this an individual case per claimant? What's the difference? How does that whole process work? What's the significance between one and the other? And where would anybody who's pursuing a Lejeune case fall into that category?
Another great question. So I've actually done class actions. I can tell you there's a main distinction here. I'm not one of those attorneys that does, you know, the free jelly of the month club class action. I mean, the classes that we represent are very serious, and we look out for the whole kind of common benefit, if you will, of the class, not just in it for the lawyers. But the biggest difference here is that a class action is defined as all of the, you have one person representing an entire group of people under common allegations, right? So if you had an unlawful charge, the company doesn't discriminate against one individual. They charge it to everybody that is a consumer, right? So it's a $30 charge. It's common. Camp Lejeune, and I've seen this, I've seen these marketing and advertising as Camp Lejeune class action. It's not a class action, folks. And anybody that tells you it's a class action doesn't know what they're talking about. This is a mass tort. And what a mass tort is it's when you have somebody that has, say, a respiratory illness, somebody has cancer, somebody who has neurological disorder, somebody who has a birth defect. Those are all different, because you're going to have different medical bills. You're going to have different lost wages. You're going to have different pain and suffering. Those are going to be all different types of claims. And because they're not common, there'd be no way to have a class action where you have all of these different resulting uncommon injuries and illnesses. Sure, the cause might be the same, right? The cause is toxic water, but the illnesses and the injuries and the diseases are all different. So this is more of a mass tort. Think 3M, think any of the medical device or pharmaceutical litigation, things like that.
So a layman's breakdown, they may have a common cause or a common factor, in this case, the water at Camp Lejeune, but the individual consequences will vary. If they had been the same consequences, for example, you had said a company charging the same fee to their entire consumer base, that creates a class on the basis of that common consequence. Because of the Lejeune situation, you've got so many different consequences stemming out of these circumstances. So it's not necessarily a class action where there's uniformity to it.
Correct.
They have a common factor, but not a common consequence. Therefore, it's not a class.
Well, it's more of the component of, is there, yeah, exactly. Is there a common injury or illness and damage related to that? And if there's not something that you can, you know, deduce as common, then by definition, it cannot be a class action, you know, under, and we don't want to get into Federal Rule 23, but that's where you'd go to look at all of that. But so the bottom line is, a mass tort is actually, in many instances, more favorable because you're going to get, you're going to be able to file a claim based off of your own individual damages and not the damages of everyone else, which in some instances is actually better for your case because you would be able to get more than, you know, somebody with a specific type of illness or disease under Camp Lejeune may be entitled to more than a different type of illness or disease, for instance. Now, we don't know what any of those are yet because this isn't passed. We don't know what the government's position is, but that is kind of how you unravel the damages in this type of case. But the really interesting thing to know here is that you can't, and this is another, we've got to myth bust this too. I've seen people posting, file a Camp Lejeune lawsuit today. This person recovered, you know, $300,000 in a Camp Lejeune lawsuit. Those ads, that type of marketing is not indicative of what's going on. I don't know where they pulled those numbers or what they're even talking about. I sort of scratch my head because there's an issue with that. In 2016, there were a group of claimants that came forward and tried to file these claims. They were blocked by the Ferez Doctrine, which doesn't allow you to sue the government for certain things that are connected to your service. And then there was a statute of limitation, statute of repose. So basically, hey, these claims fell way beyond your ability to sue, or even if they were latent or hidden, it happened so long ago, you can't sue. So all of these cases were tossed out, you know, several years ago. So I don't know. You could file a Camp Lejeune claim, right, with the VA. That's true. You could still try to service connect as a veteran under that type of claim. But as far as winning a lawsuit goes, folks, you can't do that until this bill is passed. And anything talking about that, and we're going to talk about the other thing, which is the procedural step before filing a lawsuit here in a minute. Anything marketing that or anybody telling you that this is a bill, that this is a lawsuit you can file immediately, it's not.
There may have been a case against Camp Lejeune for this particular person. There may have been a settlement or decision for this particular person's claim, but that is not indicative of the current event. That is not indicative of the case that is, or the cases rather, that are developing in regards to the current legislation issues,
right?
The stuff that is in contemporary media.
The point is, do not rest and think that this is a slam dunk by any means. Call an attorney or a law firm that can assist with Camp Lejeune type claims. And then once this is passed, then you can likely take the administrative steps to initiate a claim. But do not let any of these marketing agencies or, God forbid, a law firm tell you that you could file a lawsuit today, because until this is filed, you're unable to file a lawsuit. And even before that. So here's what happens once this is hopefully passed. Anybody that was affected by Camp Lejeune, and if you have a question about anything Camp Lejeune related, if you want me to take a look at any of your medical records or anything, please give me a call. Just so you know, I got to be super clear on this. I'm licensed to practice law in the state of Florida. I co-counsel cases all over the country. I will have co-counsel on this case. We will likely have local counsel because these, if we file a lawsuit, will originate out of the Eastern District of North Carolina in federal court up in North Carolina. That's the exclusive jurisdiction. But we will still be able to, with local counsel and permission from the court, represent you. So just have to be clear on that. But if you have a question about Camp Lejeune, if you want us to take a look about a, you know, claim, even just questions, please call us. My direct line is 904-201-1771. Again, 904-201-1771. What we're going to get into right, you know, before the break and then after the break, we'll get into some of the more questions that I've received and some of the situations related to Camp Lejeune toxic water. But before we do that, it's important to know, before you can ever file a lawsuit in a Camp Lejeune case or claim related to the Honoring Our Pact Act, now remember, folks, that's only if this passes, right? You would have to file an administrative claim on an administrative form to the Department of the Navy, and the Navy would get 6 months to determine whether or not it was going to pay. Now, at that level, there are a few things that can happen. Now, I'm not sure what, you know, the government's position will be, but they could take a look at your claim and agree to pay it out. They could deny it, or they could not do anything, in which case your remedy would be to file a lawsuit.
We can talk about all of that and more. Again, if you've got questions, feel free to give us a call today at 855-765-1045. Lines are open, and we'll be happy to take those calls. Give us a shout during the commercial break, and we'll be back for more of Protecting Military Families with Chris Brochu on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. It's Sunday morning, and we are Protecting Military Families on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk, with Chris Brochu, the owner of Brochu Law, and the Second Opinion.
Scott, we are going to be hitting Camp Lejeune hard in the second half of the hour today again. We're going to be getting into more of the questions that I've received. We're going to talk about some of the types of injuries or illnesses that people have called about, obviously not getting into any specifics or anything, but just make sure that that we talk about some of the things that may qualify. And again, it's still in its infancy, but the bill, so long as it passes, would afford our veterans and military families comprehensive health care, VA benefits, and certain private rights of action, and that those related to burn pit exposure and also Camp Lejeune. So what we're talking about in the second half of the hour is also related to the Camp Lejeune toxic water. The number of questions that I receive related to that are, so many great questions, but so many unknowns. You know, we're going to talk about on this part of the show is, you know, are people going to lose their health care? Are people going to lose their retirement? Are they going to lose their VA benefits? I mean, and the answer to all of that is no, right?
And are there fiscal risks involved with it? If they file a claim, you know, are they looking at some sort of a potential punitive? Punitive is the wrong word. Are they looking at some sort of a fiscal?
Set off or something?
A set off or recompense, you know, what out-of-pocket expense are they looking at on this versus any kind of monies they may have already received for any particular programs? But all of that is contingent on first being able to move forward with a cause. And that doesn't happen unless the PACT Act is passed.
Yes. And what we're going to ask everyone to do again, we asked you to do it at the start of the show. We need to get all of the new listeners on board. The PACT Act, which during the first time going through the Senate passed with an 84-14 vote, it was brought back to the Senate floor based on, not to get super technical, it was a blue slip objection related to a financial component of the bill. When it went back up for revote, it only received 55 votes. 30 Republican voters had pulled back, which, again, quite surprising. In Florida here, folks, Marco Rubio voted yes. Rick Scott voted no. We need to call both and make sure that they bring this bill back to the floor and vote yes to protect our military families. I don't care what letter you have beside your name. My only question is, do you support veterans or do you not support veterans? Because that's the only thing that matters when it comes to honoring our PACT Act. Do you vote yes or did you vote no? And if you voted no, why? Right? You can't claim to protect military families and vote no for something like this. This is protecting our most vulnerable military families, the military families that have the highest medical costs and out-of-pocket and difficulties, and you're just absolutely outcasting them at this point.
And the spectrum of scenarios that people are impacted by this, from the burn pits, from Camp Lejeune, from other potential service-related dynamic incidents, that's a significant portion of veteran health that has been compromised. And to have a government opportunity to assist and then to backpedal on that, it's not a good look.
No,
it's not a good look, and it's not a good indicator for duty due to the people who have already given so much in service of the country.
Well, I follow these bills in all different kind of capacities, right? Because a lot of these bills do affect my clients one way or the other. But when I see and hear, you know, see in the news or I hear on the radio, all of these you know, bills being passed, we've got billions going here and going overseas here and going to this and going to that. And, you know, we've got something as simple as, you know, again, it's a couple $100 billion, right? Which the sticker shock is, oh my God. But when you think about $3 trillion going to the CARES Act, right? And going to these businesses that were healthy businesses, right? And now we've got veterans and military families that could potentially receive some assistance, and that's too expensive for our country. But and here's what I would say: anybody that voted no, why don't we take away their health insurance? Why don't we take away their retirement? And why don't we take away all of their benefits until we get benefits and help for these veterans and military families? And we'll see how their families affected, because I'm pretty sure in that nice AC comfy chair over on the Hill, I'm pretty sure they're receiving everything they need, unlike our military families.
And given the circumstances due, it's particularly in a campaign year, it's hard to make those kind of promises and allegations that we will do all of these things in favor of those who have given so much, and then to turn around and backpedal back against it. It's a circumstance where the right move seems so obvious. And the explanation behind why it's being held up right now, less obvious and not particularly credible. You can find out all of this information by taking a look at current headlines and events. That's certainly not the position here to argue in favor or in opposition to it. But to say, you know, there's a lot going on and an opportunity exists where you can exercise some influence. And it's an opportunity to honor and take care of the veterans, as has been promoted in the PACT Act. It's been introduced as legislation. It got approved the first time around. So, you know, it seems so obvious to do the right thing. And you've got an opportunity to express your endorsements or issues with that if you'll follow up with your local with the current Florida Senate.
Yeah, and it's the federal senators that we gotta call and make sure that they get it right. And folks, the bottom line here is, if you support veterans and military families, please call former Governor Scott's office, please call Senator Rubio, and make sure that they bring this back to the floor and vote for it. And again, what we're gonna be covering for the final half of the show today: do Camp Lejeune claims or Camp Lejeune lawsuits prohibit our military families and veterans from receiving their current benefits or future benefits? And the answer is, you will not be retaliated against if you currently have VA disability benefits or retirement benefits and file a claim. The bottom line is you may have a set off, which means if you receive a certain number of amount of benefits and you have a claim, you may receive less under a Camp Lejeune claim, but they won't say, oh, well, we gave you a settlement related to your injury, your illness. That's all we have to do. The bill does not say that you are going to lose anything. All it says is that you have a private right of action to file a claim, which if your claim is denied or the government does not respond to your claim, then you would have the right to file a lawsuit in the Eastern District of North Carolina.
Now, here's a question. Supposing someone advances a claim and the claim is approved, they win the case of the claim. Is that a one-time settlement? Is that a one-time lump sum? Is that an ongoing compensation to cover care costs? Because it seems to me like the ongoing health issues will continue to generate bills and continue to incur costs for treatments, potential other diagnoses related to circumstances. How does that play out with regards to a veteran's claim?
This is a great question. This is more of an injury type claim where you're going to be looking at past medical bills. You're going to be looking at future medical bills, you know, lost wages, pain and suffering, any of the economic and non-economic harm that was sustained by the family. So basically these claims are so vast because I just want to briefly touch on what some of the calls I've received are. So we've got calls from families that want to file a claim for veterans that passed away from toxic exposure claims in the 50s, right, 80s. We've got some that were there as toddlers that have claims related to cardiac issues, adults with cardiac issues, certain types of cancers, birth defects. The number of calls that I've received related to these issues and why I really take the time to get into these issues and service history is because you're almost connecting the dots. Okay, this military family was here, you know, or was located at this, because Camp Lejeune is a massive base, right? And they had all of these different things going on with one of the underground jet fuel holding tanks was leaking into the water supply, something that I read was like 1,200 gallons a day or something. When they did the public environmental test, they actually found several feet. I think it was between 10 and 15 feet of jet fuel on top of the water table. So you've got that going on. You've got another cleaning facility that's basically dumping dry cleaning toxins into a local water supply, you know, year after year. So the levels of toxic chemicals, benzene, things like that were, I mean, astronomical, like 10,000 times the level that a human should consume. And again, these are military families that are bathing, drinking, they're using it as cooking water. So, we're linking the dots, and every story that I hear, it's just kind of connecting. And I've actually got a local military group that has asked that I kind of just explain what's going on, the claims, and things like that. So if you're a part of a group that you want to have me come talk and explain this in more detail, have the families come, I'm happy to do that. Just reach out to me, case@brochulaw.com. Again, case@brochulaw.com or give me a call, 904-201-1771. We can set something up. But the bottom line is if you believe that your loved one passed away from a cancer, leukemia, Hodgkin's, non-Hodgkin's, lymphoma, multiple myeloma, if your loved one had any female infertility issues, miscarriages, anything related to neurological, cardiac, Parkinson's, right? If they passed away from that from 53 to 87 and they had any military service, you got to start asking the question of, was this related to anything? And look into their service history. And if they're, again, if you know, like in one of the instances, service member was there in the 50s, you know, got diagnosed with Parkinson's in the 80s, passed away in the 90s, right? That scenario, that individual was able to link their family member's history to Camp Lejeune toxic water exposure, right? That's the causal link that we're talking about. So do some research, talk to your family members. The biggest thing here is that I don't even care if you call me. I need you to call anybody. If you're a military family and you know somebody that's been exposed, please inform them of their rights and make sure that they call someone. It doesn't even need to be me. They need to call someone and at least explore their rights. If and when this bill is passed, they're only going to have a 2-year window to file a claim. And that 2-year window will limit them to the damages under the bill. And once that window has expired, you will not be able to bring a claim.
So certainly within their interest to get their health checked up, to get everything diagnosed and have any kind of information ready to roll in the event that the PACT Act is passed and there's an opportunity to move forward with that. You've already got your information ready to roll, and you're not spending part of that narrow window in gathering information and collecting stuff and running the risk of being shut out because certain diagnostic information or certain historical information isn't obtained in a timely manner.
Well, and that's kind of the challenge here is that, you know, these claims are go so far back that, you know, the average civilian medical facility keeps medical records for 10 years, right? So you need to have those on hand. You've got these estates, right? If somebody passed away and they had opened, you know, an estate in probate and then closed it out, you know, now are they reopening it? Will they allow them to represent them, right? There are all these different things going on. But the biggest thing is that you've got to do your due diligence, because I know 2 years sounds like a long time, but like Scott just said, one of the first things that we've got to do before we file our claim form, if this is passed, is we've got to do the work on the front end to collect the personnel records and the medical records. Now with my VA accreditation, what I do is I've got a clearance that allows me to basically pull those records from the VA. So anybody that associates me with their VA claim, and I do this for you know, VA disability appeal cases and different types of military claims, what we do is we pull the whole personnel record and any of the facilities that you treated at that were military, any of the you know, personnel stuff, DD-214, things like that, we can pull with your entire file. That's the type of information that we need to then file a claim, you know, at the administrative level, if this bill passes. Now, once at the administrative level, once you file a claim, and we talked about this before the last break, you've got a few things that can happen. The government could say, okay, we are going to pay this out. The government could say, we are, you know, denying this claim. They could do nothing, right? And they get 6 months to adjudicate one of these claims. So start doing the math in your head. 2 years, but your claim needs to, they need to pull all of your records, right? Now imagine this. I have my VA accreditation, which allows me to pull someone's records like that, right? I mean, the minute we submit a 2122A, within 72 hours, with as long as there are no complications, and sometimes there
within reason,
right there. I say that in a lot of scenarios we can get it that quickly. Now there are certain times, you know, the regional office may have some follow up, or maybe they have an additional clearance that we have to get through. But for the most part, we get it instantly. And here's the other way that you would do it. If you weren't VA accredited, right? Like if you go with a law firm that doesn't represent military families that often, and this is, they're jumping in, well, they've got to do FOIA requests to get all this information, which I don't know if anyone knows how to do a FOIA request. It's time consuming. We do them in some of the terrorism cases that I do because some of the information's more sensitive. It is not easy to go that route. It takes a lot more time. So just think about it. You've got potentially some representatives that have to do these FOIA requests. So they're, let's say, 6 months there. Then the government has 6 months to review a claim. Let's say you submit it immediately. You've already knocked off a year before you even get the chance. Now, the other thing is at the administrative level, you do have 2 years, right? So it's not necessarily 2 years to file suit. It would be you'd have 2 years to file that administrative claim. But I just want to make sure that we're clear here. That time is always of the essence in any of these cases. You need to call someone if you think your family has a claim. This isn't something to wait and say, you know, we'll get to this next year, or I've got, you know, I'm dealing with all these other issues, or I want to get through the rest of my summer. Please call someone. Please make sure that you are protecting your family. And like anything, I always say this in my VA disability cases, because any of the appeals that I do, inevitably I'll have a service member who was in a terrible accident. They'll say, well, you know, my buddy never made it home, or my friend had this happen to them, and that's way worse than this, and I feel guilty about filing a claim. My response is always the same. If you took anybody in our military and you said, okay, Scott, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go in the military for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, or you'll go sit behind a desk as a civilian for the same amount of time. How do you think those two people, physically, mentally, emotionally, are going to turn out, right? Now you add in combat tours. Now you add the stresses of being away from your family. Now you add any of these health complications. Now you add in all of the stresses of life, right? You're getting older. Now you add in surgeries. There's a reason why the government has set up these programs for our veterans and our military families, and you aren't gaming the system by filing a claim. The government recognizes that if you go the military route, you are going to turn out different, right? And it's not in a bad way. It's you are going to be doing, obviously, all of your training, and you're going to be exposing yourself to more things than if you were a civilian. They recognize that, which is why they make those benefits available. So remember, please remember this, and please take this from someone that didn't serve, right, like me. But I'm telling you, you've earned it. You've earned every right. You have done more than most of us will ever do for our country in your service. So you are not gaming the system. You have every right to file a claim. And if you're too proud to do it for you, do it for your family, okay? Because this is important. And similar to Camp Lejeune claims, I get a lot of calls. People, I don't want to disturb my benefits. I don't, you know, right now I finally got, you know, my medical paid for. I finally have, you know, my benefits straightened out. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to unsettle anything. The bottom line is, if nobody's willing to stand up for our veterans, our military, that we're going to see the same things over and over and over and over again. So please be brave, stand up for yourself, stand up for your family and for your other veterans.
The services exist, and you've already earned the privilege for them because you've paid the price of service to get those. You're not doing anybody a disservice except yourself by not taking advantage of them. Exercise the opportunity, make the call. Like you said, do it for yourself, do it for your family.
Exactly. And I mean, so that's for VA disability. For TSGLI, right, anybody that served between October 7th, 01 and present day, I mean, that's, you know, file a claim there, right? That's, you're paying for that insurance under service member group life insurance. So that's a scenario too, where now that we're talking about, you know, filing a claim for what you're owed, that's another scenario where you've paid for insurance. You may be entitled to file a claim if you were injured in a traumatic event and you have a qualifying loss within 2 years of that traumatic event, and you're paying premiums for SGLI. So look into that. I mean, you wouldn't be too proud to file a claim against your insurance company if you were in an automobile accident, right? I mean, if you got your bumper ripped off, you wouldn't be like, ah, I don't want to do that to
but
Geico.
But I mean, my rates, right, are so low, you know, and they've been so good to me through all the years and everything. So, right, you know, I'd feel bad for taking advantage of that.
They're no. So honest, man.
No, that sentiment does not exist.
No. So please, just be mindful of your rights. Help us spread the word here. Please call your senators and make it known that this is unacceptable. We are going into a mid-year election where some of them may be up for a vote. And if they don't stand up for our military families, you're going to have to look you're going to have to look who you need to vote for, because there's just no way that this is acceptable. They've admitted in Camp Lejeune that the government poisoned our military families for years, and it's time for them to make it right. So if you have a question, feel free to reach out, case@brochulaw.com, or call me directly, 904-201-1771. We're actually going to see you here next week live one more time, back to back. So if you have a question between now and then, please give me a call. If you have a Camp Lejeune claim or question, please feel free to give me a call. I'm happy to speak with you.
Again, you can reach out to case@brochulaw.com. That's case@brochulaw.com. And a video version of today's show is available, along with previous shows, at brochulaw.com. Thanks to our friend Justin at Nova Productions. Join us next Sunday morning for Protecting Military Families with Chris Brochu.